Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. As we come your way every Sunday evening at 7 p.m., we are rebroadcast on HSN.FM. Check their listings for the days and times. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, so we encourage you to check out our archives and find out what it is that we're doing. As a matter of fact, to that end, I would like to let you know that I'm interested in what you're thinking about. And that has to do with your contacting me, sending me an email, dropping me a line, letting me know what you think of the programs. Let me know what you would like us to talk about. Maybe you even have a guest suggestion. We'd love to hear from you. We're wanting to build community. We're wanting to create a dynamic program in that regard. So we encourage you to contact us. We want to create a community, a community-driven content, and so that includes you. So the email address, so that you can send us your input, is TMYS. That's short for Tell Me Your Story, TMYS at richarddugan.com. That's TMYS at richarddugan.com. Today's program, we're going to trust is going to go in the right direction. As a matter of fact, that is the subject of today's program. We have a couple of special guests on the line using Skype today. We're going to be talking with authors as well as partners. We're going to be talking with Robert Kosmar, and we're going to be talking with CJ Heck. And I want to welcome both of you to our program. It's great to have you on the line.
Thank you very much, Richard. We're glad to be here.
I'm not sure that I should refer to it as a line anymore, but however we refer to it, it's always nice to have a way of connecting with people that is, in a way, more efficient. It's cleaner. It's clearer. It's allows us to get past the distractions of some of the sounds. One of the things that we'll talk about tonight or today on the program has to do with the issue of trust. And I don't know that either of you had an opportunity to visit the website and check out any of the programs, but one of the subjects that I've talked about many times has to do with our intuition, listening to that still small voice and following the promptings. And I mean, that takes us right into the issue of trust, because if we don't trust that voice, that guidance, it's very unlikely that we're going to even trust ourselves or other people. And really, it's that inner world, which is where we really need to be living. Robert, how would you define this concept of trust in this context?
Well, I think you kind of hit on it really well there when you were describing it, Richard. Trust is really the glue that the universe is bound together by, and love is the principal element or the principal product of that trust. Most people throughout their life go through series of beliefs and experiences in a search for what we would call finding themselves, and not until they get to a point to where they walk away from just about all of those beliefs and they begin to really investigate their feelings do they understand the importance of trust in every aspect of your life, whether it be doing a radio program or writing a book or being in a relationship. As you use the word, that intuition, or as I would use that as well, the heart, the heart center, being able to come from your feelings and to understand that those feelings are interconnected between people, between people and existence, and that part of them, that intelligence, that higher self, as some people call it, is the path that we are to follow if we are to become more consciously aware of who and what we are and what this life is all about. Without that personal knowing, all we have to go by are the beliefs that are passed down to us secondhand. And you really cannot learn who you are if somebody else is telling you who you are. You have to find that out within yourself.
It's one of those things when we, and I sort of tongue-in-cheek say that if you are going to listen to that voice, that inner prompting, that you need to follow the promptings. And if you're not going to do that, then don't listen. I say that tongue-in-cheek because I want people to listen. And I have to say that, Robert, I don't know about you. I'm, of course, a pretty big, not huge, I don't go to the conventions, but I'm a big Star Trek fan. And I get and we've actually featured that subject matter in our Mythosophia program, where we're talking mythology, and we focused on one of the characters that was more the protagonist. But it really, I think, made the point, at least from my perspective, that you had this collective. It was referred to as the Borg. They were cyborgs. But they all had different jobs, yet they were all working on the same big picture, whether they were aware of what that big picture was or not. We kind of do the same thing. You and I, Robert, we're going to be listening to that guidance and trusting it and hopefully following through, carrying out the tasks that we're asked to do. They're going to be totally different. I'm not going to be asked to do what you're asked to do, and vice versa. But somehow, again, in that big picture, big scheme of things, it all works together. And it's an amazing thing that I think we don't really want to question. We just, you and I think, are of like mind, I think, as well as CJ, in terms of we want a better world. Now, I don't know where those thoughts are coming from. One of my metaphysical primers is The Impersonal Life, that talks about this voice, the I am, if you will. What level, on a scale, let's just say, of 1 to 10, what level of trust do you put in that guidance that comes to you from within?
Well, I think for a person who's aware, okay, they learn over a period of time to trust that voice.
100% almost.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they learn to be flexible as well, because that type of exchange of energy, or that type of consciousness that is becoming more prominent within a person's normal life, is not always completely clear. You have to get used to it. You have to get used to trusting it. You have to get used to following, you know, those feelings that you're getting when you're having that relationship, because it is a relationship. It's an intimacy.
Very much so.
That is working within us, through us, in terms of myself and Catherine as writers. You know, in our relationship, we find at times that sometimes we'll say something and the other person was thinking exactly the same thing. There's the miracle, the wanting of a better life that you talked about. The foundation of that has to be built on a trust that it does exist, and that we have a part in that, and that when we find the place that we belong, then everything else will start to begin to come together in a way that it should. That everybody will begin to see, you know, how unity works, how love, you know, exists in people and nations and countries as not just a ideal but a principle of living. But it has to begin with each individual person. Every person individually has to awaken to that trust and that intuition, and to learn from it before anything else really can be affected by it. Because that's just the nature of the way it is. We have that free will.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to either follow that intuition, like you said earlier, or just to say, well, forget it. It's just too, you know, too confusing.
I even put it in the context of, you know, I've worked at a number of different places. I've had a number of different bosses. And I took the job to do the kind of work that I want to do, but I'm not going into this building to freelance. The stations that I've worked for, they had a particular direction that they wanted to go. Ergo, I'm going to use the talents that I have to help that station go in that direction. And I think the other thing, too, in terms of listening is trying to keep from getting distracted. One of the things that's often come that's been verbalized to me was, you know, well, what do you think about what the other stations are doing? And I said, I don't care what the other stations are doing. What I care about is what we're doing. And are we doing today better than what we were doing yesterday? And are we going to do better tomorrow than we do today? And that's going to make us a good radio station. We're going to have, you know, it's going to be clean and it's going to be clear and it's going to be tight and it's going to be smooth and people are going to be interested in what we're providing. And I think that's the same thing with this whole business of trust. You and CJ, you both have this wonderful talent of writing, and you've produced a number of different books, poetry in particular. I want to kind of dive into that here a little bit later with CJ in terms of poetry and its aspects. I was never really able to get into that. Now, I did in school, grade school, they had you memorize certain poems.
Yes.
But I couldn't tell you what that was that I memorized from way back when. But you have this talent. Now, what you write about obviously is up to you. But what you are led to write about, that's a whole nother story. So to that end, Robert, Trilogy of Awareness. Obviously, trilogy being three, we'll look at that. Tell me about your perspective as far as what you've written here in these short stories. Awareness, what is that to you?
Well, for me, awareness is becoming more conscious of who I am and what I am and what the universe is all about. Those three stories actually were given to me way back in, I think, the early part of the 90s. And the funny thing about it was that I had written maybe a little bit up until that point. When I was in high school, I wasn't a real good English student at all. But what happened was that I got up and I just knew that I had a story. And then I went down the hall from where I was living and I started to take a shower. And then it's like I had two more. And it was like this, it was like these feelings were being downloaded into me in such a way that I knew that they were the beginning of something that I could take and develop when I was ready. And as long as I trusted the process, it would ultimately turn out the way it was supposed to be. And they're all basically, in some respect, they're the story of my journey through my experiences in life, through my inner healing, through my relationship within myself. And they're I guess you call it an allegory, much in the similar way that you were talking there about. I was always amazed in the 90s by the program of Star Trek, The Next Generation, because I saw so much, you know, spirituality, metaphysical concepts in everything they did.
Yes.
And Star Wars, when it came out, was kind of the same way. It's like I recognized, you know, what the writer was trying to convey in those movies and that I felt that was a part of me and, you know, what I was trying to understand and experience in life. So those stories were soul-searching for me and also very healing, because when I would allow myself to write, there was this little buddy sitting on my shoulder. And when I would get, you know, stuck, well, where am I going to go here? What am I going to do next? You know, it's like I would get this little prompting and this little insight, well, go here or do this. And it became great fun and it was very playful. I had no idea, other than that initial urge, where any of those stories were going to go. But as I further went through the process of trusting my feelings and writing, I began to realize that the story kind of had a life of its own. It was a natural unfoldment of something very personal about my life that seemed to be working in conjunction with me, or using me, you know, to use another word, to write something that I knew would be important for other people as well. And that's what I've often found in all the work that I do with writing and stuff, is that what I do is to help other people to understand and accept themselves too, because the journey away from the world's way of doing things is scary in the beginning. And a lot of people realize that there's a certain formula, so to speak, that they're constantly being sold, whether it be on TV or whether it be through their association with organizations or the system, so to speak, that often is contrary to who they feel that they are. So my work is to try to help people to understand that what you feel is genuinely real, that it is something that you need to listen to if you choose to do so, and that if you're going to be happy, you know, truly happy in your life and find fulfillment, you need to follow those feelings and let them take you to wherever they're going to take you. And the beauty of it, as time goes on, is you begin to realize that all of those things that you may have thought or judged as not being important or significant or being real end up having laid out a life in front of you that has made you happier than you could ever possibly imagine.
You know, I heard a phrase the other day from a woman in Japan who, she's a businesswoman and everything, very successful and young, probably in her 20s. And I mean, she's self-made, and yet she's extremely wealthy. And she says, this was kind of like the slogan that she sort of lived by, or the phrase, strive not for success, strive for happiness. And I find it interesting, and I've shared this with people, and they say, you know, I've never thought of it this way. Do you know that in our Constitution of the United States, in the preamble, it says that we have the right to life and we have the right to liberty? However, it does not say that we have the right to happiness, but it does say we have the right to pursue happiness, which is a sort of frustration, because it's like, okay, does that mean that's all I'll be doing is pursuing it and I'll never achieve it?
Yeah.
I think that for most people, that's kind of, you know, the way life works, is that they go through multiple relationships, multiple jobs, living in discontent, trying to find the ideal of love and like you said, happiness and satisfaction, and they get worn out. They get to the point of desperation, to where they've tried everything, done everything, and they're still miserable and unhappy. And for some individuals, that point, that critical mass, when it's reached to where you can't think of anything else to do, it's a real significant turning point in your life.
Search for love is like that. Some people spend their whole lives searching for it, and when they finally give up, bam, it hits them.
Yes, I know. I've had that experience.
CJ,
it's interesting because all of this really dovetails into, and I've done this on a number of occasions more recently than before. Every so often I'll get a book from a publisher, or I'll get a book from the writer, such as yourselves, and somehow they will have dropped in a paper, you know, the note, the press release, whatever, somewhere in the middle of the book. And I did this with one book, and I opened it up and going, well, this is interesting that it's here. So I went back to the beginning of that section, and I read forward through the page that I'd found. Well, in this case, I just flipped open, and this is what is interesting. In your book, CJ, Anatomy of a Poet, I came across this one. It's called The Bumps in the Road. If you are the one, you have the ability to forgive. But more importantly, you have the ability to forget. You'll freely offer trust because we've both known vulnerability and we each are worthy of trust. If I ever awaken to find you there, take my hand, walk with me into tomorrow. Our yesterdays, the stepping stones to carry us through months into years, to sit side by side, hand in hand, in our chairs on the front porch of forever. I know you're there. I feel you. And what struck me was at the beginning, in terms of the reference to, of course, forgiving and forgetting, but also trusting. You freely offer trust.
Yes.
And I have a feeling, though, that was probably a poem that was written more about the two of you.
Yes, very definitely.
And the privilege in the sense of seeing the screen that I'm looking at, the picture of the two of you, where our listeners don't, but they certainly can go to your website. And speaking of which, how would people connect with the two of you? Where would they go on the internet to find you?
Well, the blog that we actually co-write, the first blog, is called Knowing Whispers. And its URL is http://knowingwhispers.blogspot.com. And then the other blog is the one that Catherine moderates, which has been tremendously well-received and respected on the internet. And it was born out of her early experience with her first husband, Doug, who was a medic who was killed in Vietnam. And she has a website called Memoirs from Nam, where she interacts with a large number of veterans from around, really from around the world. And they discuss their feelings relative to their experiences in Vietnam, combat, PTSD.
It's it's adventure and healing by through writing. And they write for each other and comment. And it really, it's just, I told them all one day in one of the groups we all belong to, I said, it's no longer my blog. I said, it's more your blog than it is mine. Because they write to each other. And it's put out there. My job all day long is putting together their blogs and editing them. I'm a Nazi as far as grammar goes. So
well, I'm glad, because I would like for somebody to start grabbing a hold of people's collars and saying, look, that is not the way you say it.
She makes my writing readable.
Ah. I around the stations that I've worked for, they know me for pet peeves such as when you are reading from the first person, you never introduce yourself, especially on radio, let alone TV, with the first words, this is, and your name.
Yeah.
It is, you know, if I was introducing Robert to CJ, I'd say, Robert, this is CJ. But if I'm introducing myself to Robert, I don't say, Robert, this is Richard. Especially if we're face-to-face. I mean, and when you're dealing in this medium, it's first-person, singular, and very personal in that respect. And that's kind of the way I view it. And then there are other issues, too. But I find it interesting, and I want to delve into this in our next segment, CJ. I would like to talk some about poetry.
Okay.
I actually received a poem from someone I went through a five-day intensive with back in the 90s. And she sent me this poem, and then music just kind of came into my head, and I turned it into a song. Never really written it, I just have it in my head. But I thought, boy, that is amazing that she put all of that together in the context of those 5 days into, I think it was four or five stanzas on one page. And supposedly, I do a fair job of reading poetry, but as far as writing it, I haven't been able to connect. So I want to talk about this modality that you use to express yourself, your thoughts and feelings when we come back. We're talking today with the authors, C.J. Heck and Robert Cosmer, and his book, Robert's book, is Trilogy of Awareness and Anatomy of a Poet. Is C.J. Heck's book, and I encourage you to check out their websites. We're going to have both of the links up on our website, richarddugan.com, so that you can just click on their names, and it will take you to their respective blogs. And, of course, find out more about the books. These are just two of the books that I have here, and they've written others, as well as the writings on the internet. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I encourage you to get in touch with us. I would really like your ideas. What topics would you like for us to talk about? What guests would you like for us to focus on? We are here for you, and all you have to do is send me an email. RichardDugan.com is the website, but the email address is TMYS, that's Tell Me Your Story, TMYS at richarddugan.com. TMYS at richarddugan.com. Today, our guests on Skype are Robert Cosmer and CJ Heck, and we're talking about, well, we've been talking about a lot of things in relation to trust, but we're also talking about poetry. And as I mentioned, as we went out of the last segment, I wouldn't consider myself a poet. I can barely, and again, I don't. One of the things that really kind of grates against my nerves is when people put themselves down, and I'm trying not to do that about myself. I am not a poet. That is not my strong suit. I can write, and I'm still working on a book that I've been working on since 2001. And it's not a very... I'm not writing War and Peace either, Robert and CJ. But I'm just... I guess I'm waiting for the right time, and maybe that time is coming sooner than I think. But I'm curious as to how you found poetry as this outlet. Obviously, the blog with the veterans that you are associating with and connecting with is a poetry of its own sort. But in terms of this poetry that we're talking about, and the book in particular, Anatomy of a Poem, that I read from earlier, how did that come about for you?
Well, I actually started writing for children back in 1999, and I started a website, Barking Spiders Poetry, and I put all the poetry for kids right on there, and I started getting emails that said, where can we get your poetry? Where can we get it? So I said, okay, I'm working full-time. I'll quit my job and give it 6 months. And if I don't get a contract after 6 months, then I'll go back to work. And 2 days before the 6 months was up, I got a contract. So my first book was born then. And then I was writing all along for healing. I wrote poetry to help deal with the loss of my first husband. And then I also wrote short stories. So I have 5 books. And 4 of them are poetry, and 1 of them is short stories. But I started writing as a healing process.
And what kinds of transformational experiences, can we say, that you have experienced through this process?
Oh, wow. Well, I jumped right on when you were talking about the inner voice, because ever since I was a child, I heard an inner voice. And my mother did too, and she would say, how did you know this? And I said, well, my friend told me. And she said, well, always listen to that friend. Always listen to it. And I did, and it actually saved my daughter's life. So twice, 2 different daughters, by listening to that inner voice. And it was not always serious. One time it told me I had a flat tire and I had to leave a half hour early, and I did. There was a flat tire.
I find it interesting that you refer to it as your friend.
When I was a little girl, I did.
That is the same designation that I also use.
Is it your friend?
Yes. I've never given it a name.
Robert and I have deep conversations about the friend. And is it your own self that you're talking to? You have this intuition, or is it serendipitous? What is it?
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter as long as you listen to it.
Exactly. And then follow the promptings. I was going through an intensive also, and we were to write down a phrase, sort of a mission statement. And this was on a big, it had to be 2 feet long by maybe 12 to 14 inches wide. And we were given this big marker. And my commitment was, and I still have that piece of paper too. And my commitment was to listen to and in big letters, follow the promptings.
Okay.
And some days I've been quite challenged. So in terms of the writings that you're doing, especially in light of poetry, do you ever come across an experience of writing these poems? I mean, because even I could even ask Robert the same question as far as his short stories. it's all, it sounds to me like you, it's almost borderlining automatic writing of sorts, if you're familiar with that.
I have one experience that I would love to share with
Please.
You. When I was still writing children's poetry, I got the, most of it's lighthearted or touching on subjects that children worry about. I say my inner child writes the children's poetry. Because I think back to what was I afraid of? What made me angry? What really upset me? What made me happiest? But this one day I was sitting there and it was like something else, someone else was writing for me. And this poem came out. And once I sat back and read it, it was really very sad. It was about a child looking down from heaven and talking to her parents. And I thought, oh, that's not something I usually write. That's really very sad. And it wasn't for 5 years. I was doing a school visit, and there were 7 schools bused to this one central school in Ohio. And after I left, I spent 3 days there, and after I left, I got a phone call the next week from the librarian, and she said, I have some really sad news for you. One of our little second graders was killed in a car accident, but what I want you to know is she carried that your book around with her for the whole week, and she said, I'm the little angel in this book. And everyone just smiled, you know, oh, that's nice, okay. But she said, no, really, I'm the little girl, and I'm the angel. I'm going to be that angel. And so when the little girl died, the whole town, of course, went to her funeral. And at the funeral home, the parents passed out a pink sheet of paper with that poem on it. And they asked my permission if they could etch the poem on her tombstone. But that's why that poem came through me. It was for 5 years from then.
Wow.
Is that something? That is really something.
I think that, again, we never know what our part is in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly.
It's one of the reasons I've always loved James Redfield and his book, where he talks about how each of us has messages for the other.
Everyone you meet or meets you, you're either going to learn something or teach something.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But that was very humbling, very humbling.
Wow. Robert, I'm curious as to your experience. Have you ever had any experiences of that nature where these stories, I mean, you say they just kind of, they flow out of you. Have you ever had that kind of experience where not only was it just flowing out of you, but it was like even subconsciously or unconsciously, you just were writing and writing and writing and writing?
I pretty much write just about every day, and some of the experiences under which I get those inspirations, or what I call whispers, can be quite humorous, because many times I'll just be, you know, going around the house, getting a cup of coffee, getting Kathy a cup of coffee, doing, you know, this and that that you would normally do, you know, when you're at home. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there's like this very silent attention, communication coming through, get over to the computer now. And this often happens when I'm in the bathroom on the toilet sometimes. Some of my best, you know, communications come through. So they're not particularly concerned about where I'm at. It's that I'm readily available to share what they have, or what that part of me has to share with, you know, the rest of the humanity through what I call the whispers.
You know, I'm working on a particular book, and I've done some writing, I've done some journaling, which I haven't done for quite literally a decade or more. But when I go back and I read some of that stuff, I have to acknowledge that for me, and the journal is different certainly than writing short stories, and of course, in a way, that's what you're doing, CJ, is keeping a journal for all the world to see, in a manner of speaking.
You're putting yourself out there.
Yeah, you really are.
That's part of the test.
Do you ever find yourself, because you know that, editing as you go, saying, oh, wait, I better word this a little differently or say this a little this way.
Sure. But then you come to a point and you say, well, it's a memoir. It's part of me.
Yeah.
This is part of me. So, hey.
And Robert, what about you?
Oh, constantly. I mean, sometimes I'll get whispers and I'm writing it and I'm saying, you know, do I really want to say this?
This is going to cause a lot of trouble.
Again, it goes back to that trusting. Yeah. You know, trusting the entire relationship between how these are received, how there is a cooperation there in terms of, you know, how it feels. Does it feel right? Is that the right word? You know, this type of thing. There's a process there, not only of meeting, you know, writing what I'm feeling, but also of it being edited as I'm writing. And then everything that I do write, I pass back to Kathy so that she can confirm whether or not what I'm doing feels right. So there's actually two kinds of editing processes that go through the whispers. And
it's trusting your heart, because you have to feel the words.
Right.
You have to feel them.
Mm. And I've been fortunate in the sense that over the past 30 years, I've had a lot of experiences with a lot of different situations and a lot of different people. And still, I'm amazed at times when these whispers come through, because they don't necessarily follow a commonly accepted path in terms of the information that I'm getting. And I have to trust that, well, okay, you know, we're all trying to discover who we are and what it's all about. And maybe this is a little bit more of what it is than what somebody else has said it was. So, again, it really is a challenge in terms of, okay, are you going to totally trust and surrender to what's going on here, what is coming through you and what's being shared? You know, or are you going to shy away from sometimes those situations that will challenge not only yourself, but a lot of other people as well?
Well, if I can interject something here, I think the biggest thing is reminding people that the whispers are only meant as a guide, so that when people read them, if it rings true with them, maybe it will help them to think more about it. We want to stay away from the guru thing, because that's not what we are. You know, these are just messages that are passed along. That's all.
They really, Richard, their design is to speak to your feelings. If a person's at a certain point of their own development, or they're seeking or their awareness, and they go to the website, or they pick up the book, a Big Little Book of Whispers, which has about 1,000 of those whispers in it, or close to 2,000, mm-hmm. You'll know when you start to read them if they're speaking to you. And their purpose is to assist in the process of understanding that we all know things at a certain level that we don't think we do. Again, it's a part of this process of the gift that of writing that Catherine and I have. You know, we can be going through a day, having a terrible day, and you know, you feel like, I can't write. Where do they ever think I could write? You know, you know, self-doubt, the whole nine yards, you know. And then and on another day, where things are going particularly well and you feel, you know, rather blissful and contented and stuff, all of a sudden those communications start coming through. So it's a process of a relationship with yourself and a relationship of self-discovery that is critical if a person is to, as they say, or the ancients used to use the term, know thyself. You have to get to a point, like I was saying very early in our conversation, to where you're willing to let go of all the crutches that are commonly used, or the props that are commonly used, and you have to become very much focused and centered on your feelings and on what those feelings reveal to you. Because once you learn to trust yourself, even on a small level, not only do you realize other gifts you may carry with you, but you begin to realize that the answers that you seek and you've been looking for most of your life, you have those answers. You just were not able to trust yourself enough to find them.
That is a huge step for a lot of folks. I've gone to intuitives. I also know, Robert, that you also delve into astrology. And I've gone to them as well. And I've taken the perspective now, based even in light of what the way you've put it, I go to these people more for confirmation. I'm having trouble really getting that, grasping the trust aspect in terms of what I know or what I think I know. And I need a little nudge. I just need somebody to help me to say, yeah, you are correct. That's what I'm seeing here. And it's not like I need to go to somebody and say, I need you to tell me my fortune.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No.
You can't do that.
And I think that for some folks, it's I used to think about this in terms of these folks, and I used to see someone almost on a weekly basis with my now wife, and we would just go there for guidance, and we weren't expecting her to predict anything for us. It was more we wanted to receive some guidance, some support, some encouragement. Keep going in the direction you're going. Don't stop. You're doing great. You know, that kind of thing. And I think we all need that.
Well, how we use astrology between the two of us is I might wake up someday and I say, I don't know what in the world is wrong with me. I just feel on edge about everything. I feel invisible. Things aren't going well. I feel like I could scream. And he'll say, hang on a second, hang on. And he looks up the chart and he says, okay, this is what's going on in your chart. And this would explain why you're feeling that way. We don't use it for prediction, more or less to explain why we feel the way we do at that particular time. It works well.
I like that. And that can certainly be helpful.
Uh-huh.
Because there are times when, you know, you'll go into a particular space, and as you say, you're feeling a particular way, and he's like, what?
You don't understand.
What's
why?
Going on? Why am I...
you feel overwhelmed some days.
Yeah.
But you know something, Richard, I'm going to interject something here too.
Yes.
for you know, your listeners and stuff. Everything that we've been talking about in regards to astrology is valid. But the next step for people when they are in those situations of frustration and doubt, fear, or whatever they are, is to trust yourself enough that if you will internally question, internally search through those feelings, you're going to find out that you know exactly why you feel that way. And that builds, when you begin to have that relationship with yourself, that builds a sense of trust that you don't need to go outside of yourself to find the solution and the answers to what, you know, is going on in your life, that you do know what needs to be done. You just need to have maybe the courage to face the truth and then to begin to do what you know you need to do to move to the next level.
Hmm. I have to read something that I just came across, and I like this, and I think I'd like to dovetail into this, and I know that you will know what this is. Life becomes easier when you learn to accept an apology you never got.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's almost to the level of self-forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're more eager and willing to apologize to someone else for our wrongs or accept the apologies of others, which ties into something I think Robert and I talked about on our phone conversation a few days ago. The golden rule, if you will. The one law that summed up all of the laws in the Old Testament, for example. And I sort of have rewritten it. Do unto others as if you were the others.
Very good.
So in terms of this law, this the law of love, if you will, in terms of giving oneself the very thing that you would give to somebody else. That's one of the things that I've shared with people. I said, you know, especially if they're being pithy with somebody. I said,
yeah.
Okay, is that really how you would talk to your friend? Oh, no, they're being self-deprecating. One of the things that really grates against me, I mentioned earlier, and I try not to do that to myself. I try not to speak down about myself. And that's not coming from ego. It's just saying, look, you have value. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, when you get to our age, we tease about it all the time. You know, why did I forget that? I'm old. But it's in a teasing way.
Sure. But
just
I find
recognizing facts.
But I even find people who actually, they mean it. They sound very serious about it. I mean, and they do this on television. They do this on the radio. They do this in these kinds of contexts.
And it's uncomfortable for those who hear it.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And so I say to them, would you say that to your best friend, to your mother, your brother, your sister, your father, et cetera, anybody close? Oh, no, I'd never say that.
Some would, though, Richard.
There are those. And to those who say, no, I wouldn't, I'd say, well, then why are you saying it to yourself? Because you're even more important than all those other people that I've listed.
And that brings me back to that saying that you said about accept the apology you never got is also a case of if you accept it, you can let it go.
Yeah.
And that's it. Otherwise, it's just baggage you're carrying around, that anger you're harboring those feelings, those negative feelings, and you have to let them go.
Yeah. I have to say, too, and I don't know if you two have animals, pets around, but
We did.
You did. I have to say that it's the greatest experience in learning about self, watching various programs on training and raising dogs or even cats or any animals that you might have. They pick up on your emotional state so easily. I mean, mm-hmm. if you want to talk about psychic, they are. And when you're not in a good frame of mind, they're not going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. You know, they may still love you. They may still come over and cuddle. But, you know, if you're angry or you're sad.
Hide.
Yeah. And that's not to say that any of this is wrong to be angry or to be sad, but it affects these creatures to the extent that, and I'm learning this anew with our latest arrival as a puppy, and trying to find that state of calmness, of self-assurance, and confidence in terms of being the alpha.
Yeah.
And it's not in a dictatorial context either. It's, I want what's best for you and for me and for us to coexist and have a great time doing it.
Exactly.
And I have a feeling that this would be a great way for us as individuals, as human beings, to live with one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to get it across to the animal that there are certain ground rules. I mean, I won't pee on the floor. You're not allowed to pee on the floor.
So let's talk a little bit more, Robert, about now you say that you, of course, it's your blog. You're writing about yourself again. You're journaling, you know, live and in color, as it were, right there on the internet for all the world to see. And once it's up there, it's next to impossible to ever get it down because somebody may have copied and pasted or something like that, right?
Basically, yes.
And Google takes charge and they have it all over the place.
So what are your feelings as you're putting that out there to the world?
Well, I just know and have known that the writing that I have received was something which I needed to share. And of course, the internet and blogging is a, you know, fairly easy way to be able to do that. The whispers that I get on one level, they're for me to speak to me. And then the whispers are also there for certain individuals, maybe in different countries throughout the world, that on that particular day need to hear something, need to receive something that speaks at a level of something that they're looking at or going through or searching. And again, on my part, that's just, it's a process of trust, you know, that's my function, like you were saying earlier, you know, about learning what your gift and skill is and how that translates into what you do and how you work with others. For me, it's a matter of just trusting that, okay, these particular insights, whispers, if you want to call them, that other people need to hear these things. They need to get some kind of validation or some kind of perspective beyond their mind, beyond the mental approach, you know, beyond the level of techniques.
And get past the mind and ego.
Yeah. That just speaks to the heart of who they are and what they're going through and what they're looking for.
Well, it certainly does seem to me that this process that we are all kind of going through, you folks are sort of, I think you're wonderful guides in that respect, saying, hey, it's okay.
Oh, thank you.
My perspective has always been, well, you know, God already knows all this stuff. So what if 7 billion other people know and most of them don't care?
Well, he writes these for those who do.
Yeah.
And maybe some that haven't known anything about it. I didn't know I was aware until Robert came into my life.
Sometimes, too, you know, Richard, you know, being human, having an ego, so to speak, it can be discouraging because of that very fact. I mean, I know that the things that I write, even though I see a large interest, okay, I realize that some of those whispers are probably hard to digest, hard to understand, but I never wrote the things that I've been given to try to look at it from the standpoint of getting famous or becoming, you know, wealthy or whatever. They were things that I knew would be of help to people because they were helpful to me, and that they had a kind of a universal anecdotal type quality to them, that they spoke, you know, beyond just the intellect into the heart of a person, and that they would remind that person that they have within them the wisdom and the intelligence and the love they need to be able to make their life better if they'll just open themselves to that inner guidance that we all have with us.
Tell me a little bit individually, I'll start with you, Robert, about your own personal spiritual walk, your background, where you come from.
Oh, boy. Well, I was raised Roman Catholic, and then in about 1971, I couldn't go back to college because there was a recession. And I really, at that time, had two choices. It was to go to college or go to Vietnam. And I preferred to go to college, even though I went out for ROTC while I was in college. But my junior year, I couldn't go back because of finances. And it really kind of threw me for a loop, because for the first time in my life, I didn't have that, you know, that support system that I had grown up with, my friends, you know, the familiarity of certain things that I was used to. So it was a very difficult time, a very confusing time, a very painfully alone weird time in a way. Of course, it was, you know, the early part of the 70s, the latter part of the 60s. And I began to do some things that were common at that time from the standpoint of, you know, smoking a lot of marijuana, drinking too much. And in a process of about, somewhere in the 1971 or 72, in the process of a very short period of time, I just went through a horrible time, psychologically a very horrible time, a very painful time, where a lot of my upbringing and the circumstances around that kind of collided with the need to grow and to let go and to experience, you know, my feelings, because I was kind of restricted, you know, by the way I was up, you know, brought up and the upbringing that I had. So due to the combination of all those factors and the use of drugs and stuff like that to some degree, I just had what really amounted to psychologically is almost a complete breakdown. But in that breakdown, there was something that happened that began the entire process of the changing of the direction of my life. And I mentioned that, I think, in my biography or in the information that I put out there, that there was this experience of cosmic consciousness that I had. And that particular experience, I'll relate that in the best way I can using words. I was at the point of wanting to commit suicide because the pain that I was going through and didn't understand was so intense. It was like somebody taking a hot, you know, a hot iron and poking it in my head. Mm. And the day that I had this experience was the day that it seemed like the pain was the most intense that it had ever been, to the point that I just wanted to scream, you know, to use a, you know, a terminology. But at the point that you know, got to an apex, there was a situation where I was downstairs in my family's, or in my bedroom at home, and I had been reading a Bible that my family had carried, you know, ever since I could remember, but never used. And I was relating in there to some of the Psalms by David. And I found some comfort in them in the sense that I recognized they were by a man who was tormented in pain. But what happened was that in the moment of that real severe pain and that anguish that I was going through, I uttered out what amounted to basically a prayer or a request, you know, that, you know, God, if you're real, I need you now, you know, because at that level of my development, I didn't know how to handle all this stuff going on. I didn't understand any of it. And what happened was, in that moment, it was like somebody had taken two electrodes and put them on my body. And up and down my body, there was this feeling of intense, instantaneous peace. And I was crying like a baby. I could see this light coming off of my body through the tears. And when I looked over to the Bible that I had on my lap, there was this voice talking to me, those scriptures that I was sitting there. And I can remember the thought that I had in my mind at that time. It was kind of the essence of, it's about darn time you got here.
Mm-hmm.
It happened, you know, and that changed the whole course of my life. Up until that point in time, I was kind of, you know, just kind of going along, doing what everybody else did, being like everybody else. Yet the circumstances of my life weren't allowing me to do that easily, and having to deal with adversity at that time wasn't something that I was accustomed to. So I wasn't handling it really well and making some bad decisions and choices instead of really dealing with issues that, you know, were who I was at that point. So that very first experience introduced me to a part of myself, to a part of the universe. For some people, it can be, you know, God, if they want to use that terminology, that I knew was there. I didn't have to believe anything. Nobody had to preach anything to me. I had firsthand experience and knowledge that there is something beyond what I think, what other people believe. There is something that I've experienced and that I know this happened to me for a reason.
That's quite a almost a road to Damascus kind of story.
Just about.
CJ, can you share with us your spiritual path from that early age?
Well, again, I had a lot of what I called my friend talk to me. And other than that, nothing really until Robert came into my life. And then all sorts of strange and weird things started to happen. And I actually met my voice, this little voice that was inside of me. And he called himself Dinah. And I'll tell you how it all came about. I had this series of candles that you screw in the light, and they're battery operated, and I kept them all on a shelf in the basement. There's this landing in my basement with a shelf, and I had 12 of them lined up there for waiting for Christmas. This was in the middle of the summer. And I went to the basement to get something one day, and I opened the door, and all of those lights were on. And I couldn't believe that. And I literally picked them up and unscrewed them, took the bulbs completely out of them. And Robert was coming back and forth to see me from Ohio at the time. And I told him about it, and he said, oh, that's really strange. So he said, you sure you had them unscrewed? And I said, all 12 of them were on. So then about a week later, I had another experience. He was there visiting, and we were watching a TV show, and I went upstairs to use the bathroom, and I saw this glint of something in the spare bedroom there. And I turned on the light, and this enormous mirror from over the dresser was laying on the floor, mirror side up. There was a lamp sitting on top of it, wasn't broken. And I went downstairs and I said, did you put that mirror on the floor? And he said, what mirror? And I brought him upstairs. I said, look, this mirror is in the middle of the room, and it's face up. And the light from the hallway when I walked through caught on that glass. And he said, no, I don't know anything about it. So between the two of us, it took two to hold it, pick it up and hang it back on the wall, and put the lamp back on the dresser. And then he left to go back home because he still worked and lived in Ohio. And I had this dream one night, and I was coming home from somewhere in my car, and I drove into the driveway. And up on my porch, there was this little tiny man sitting there in a white robe. And I got my packages and walked up to the porch, and I said, may I help you? And he didn't say anything. And I said, who are you? What do you want? And he said, you may call me Dana. And I told Robert about it, and he said, well, it sounds like you've got maybe a spiritual guide or something. And this went on for 2 years. He said, I was the one who did these strange things in the house. And I said, why would I do that? And he told me one night when I was asleep or in a vision, or I still don't understand what it was, but he said, no, you told me you wanted to see. You wanted to seize. That's why you turn those lights on. And I said, but why would I put the mirror on the floor? That doesn't make sense. And the lamp on top of it. And he said, you wanted to see more of who you are. And then he took me through several real visions. I mean, visions. I was in this one vision, and I could hear the twigs breaking under my feet as I'm walking through the woods. And I came upon this clearing, and there was a stream with real fast running water. And there were stepping stones out in the stream, but I didn't see them. I just saw one at a time. They came up, and I stepped on it. Then another one came up, and then another one, and I made my way all the way across. And Dana came later, and he said, do you know what that was? And I said, no. And he said, when you have your answer, you come and tell me. And he said, all your answers are there inside of you. I'm not going to give you any answers. And so I thought about it and thought about it, and I said, maybe those are problems. And once they're solved, each step was a way across to get to the other side. And he said that basically was it, that I was going to have a series of pitfalls or promises or problems or things that I would have to encounter and get past. And it happened. I had a whole bunch of things, didn't I? Mm-hmm. For about a year. But that was my introduction to what I call my awareness. Robert just kept saying, listen to what he says. This is your higher self. This is your spirit guide, whatever you want to call it. And I could go on and on and tell you what the things that I went through with this Dana, and it lasted 2 years. And then when he was gone, I really felt like I was in mourning. But I've learned to look inside and get my answers from within now.
Do you, and those answers from within, that voice, do you still acknowledge that is Dana, or is it something different?
Well, I tend to look at, Robert and I talk about that a lot. And I'll have different feelings on different days, and I'll say, is that my higher self? Is that just me talking to myself? Is it an intuition? That all my life I've listened to my intuition. And then there are other days when we'll both agree, no, Dana was real. I saw him in the daytime sitting in a chair in my living room one day. He wasn't like a solid person. I could see through him, but there were times when I would be talking, and he would come right into my head and tell me no, Catherine, this is, I mean, he even called me Zora at one point because of one of the visions I had. I was on riding this black horse, and I was in a white dress, and I was going through the woods at top speed. Just, I must have been running from some hellacious beast or something, but galloping and galloping and galloping. And then the horse reared, and I fell off and sat hard onto the ground, and I have this birthmark on my neck now, all my life. And in this dream or vision, I was sitting on the ground in this white dress, and this wolf came charging at me, which is what made the horse rear, and he ripped my throat out. And I remember looking down and seeing blood all over that red dress or white dress. And I've come to find out that maybe that's how I got my birthmark. Who knows? Maybe in a past life. But those kind of things, when Dana was in my life, I had these really, really wild things happen to me in my dreams.
Hmm. Again, both stories very profound and very intriguing. I was asked once by my mother if I had ever had any supernatural experiences, and I said, well, the best way I can answer that is that if I have, I'm unaware that they were supernatural, that they were just part of what's happened in my life.
Exactly.
You know, I've always believed that I've always been in the right place at the right time, whether it's career or relationships, what have you.
Everything that you choose to do in your life is right for you at that time.
Yeah, but it's more, even more so than that, it's that I was, how do I say, I don't know if I want to say I was very fortunate, but my father gave me some of the greatest advice that I pass on every time I mention this story, and that is, he said, find a job you love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Don't get stuck like me. Now, my father was only stuck for a very short time because in the 70s, he went back to college and studied computer programming, and that was when they did the punch cards and the fanfold paper. So we had a lot of drawing paper and fun with that as we were kids growing up. And I never forgot that, but I didn't know what I wanted to do.
That's good advice.
Yeah, and I'm fortunate that I just stayed open to whatever came along, and I took a shot at it, and it's just been, it's been incredible. So when when we talk about listening to that still small voice, sometimes as long as our feet are moving, metaphorically as well as literally, and we allow ourselves to be guided, we will be, and it's just extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I believe, Richard, too, that the more aware you become, the more you realize how everything fits together and why things happen and why they haven't happened.
Yeah.
And that judgment, and this is something that you were talking about and alluding to earlier, self-judgment and judgment in general is probably the biggest single factor that prevents us from being able to forgive ourselves or other people. And people unconsciously, for many reasons, throughout the world, the thing that keeps them in the dark, so to speak, is because of this unconscious, inborn desire that we have to judge ourselves or to judge other people because they're not like us, or because this is right and this is wrong, and that type of thing. All of those things go into the way that people behave and why things are the way they are, and why the results are not like we would like them to be. But inside, in our hearts, in our awareness, we realize that there is hope and that there is an answer, but it's something that we all have to individually take responsibility for.
Find it ourselves.
Yeah, and not only find it, but also accept that we have found it, that it resonates with us, not just something that someone else told us. Great story that I share with you from an interview that I did, got to be 20, 25 years ago, which saying that sounds very strange, even to my ears. It was with a Christian musician, and he had written some books, and so I was interviewing him on the program, and And he shared with me about how he had moved from California, where he was born and raised, into the Jesus movement. And he moved back east to New England. And as an adult, he was there sitting in his writer's room and looking out the window at the falling leaves as autumn was turning to winter. And the thought occurred to him, is what I believe what I've been taught or told to believe, or is it what I believe because I choose to believe it? And I thought, wow, that is awesome. That is profound.
It is.
For someone to come, you know, and for anybody with a set of beliefs that they've lived with for, who knows, 20, 30 years, to suddenly say, wait a minute, I need to reevaluate here. Now, yeah. They may be what I believe, and I can continue on in this path because it's okay. But if they aren't what I truly believe, what resonates with me, I've got to make some adjustments.
Right. Then it's probably wrong if it doesn't resonate.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Before we go, I want to give both of you an opportunity to give out contact information for folks to get in touch with you. I know, Robert, you mentioned knowingwhisperers.blogspot.com. CJ, you have a website with your blog as well.
I have two blogs.
Oh.
Yes, one is Memoirs from Nam, and that's memoirsfromnam.blogspot.com. And, of course, with the HTTP in
right.
front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is CJ's Writer Thoughts. And it's about writing, and I talk about children and family and just fun stuff, that kind of thing. And that's cjswriterthoughts.blogspot.com. And then a website is Barking Spiders Poetry.
BarkingSpidersPoetry.com. Okay.
And Richard, to clarify, too, that the website for Knowing Whispers, they might be best to do a search on the internet for just Knowing Whispers, and because the URL is knowingwhispers.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's easier for them to find it just by searching for Knowing Whispers than the URL.
Going to Google, right. Okay. Very good. Now, in this last part of our program, I'm going to ask the two of you to respond to these questions. Robert, who is Robert Cosmar?
Wow. Who is Robert Cosmar? That's a deep question. I look at myself as simply an aware individual, someone who's becoming more aware daily of the truth of who I am, of the nature of reality, and the purpose for my being here at this time on this planet. And that is to serve in the healing process that's going on, and assisting in the process of helping others to understand their feelings and what those feelings are trying to say to them. I guess in a sense, I'm a facilitator.
Now, CJ, you've had an opportunity to think about your answer to the question, but I will go ahead and ask you to respond. Who is CJ Heck?
Okay, I don't even know where to start this, because I guess I would have to start by saying I'm a survivor. And I try and just take each day as it comes. I live in the now, and I'm a human experience on my journey, and I invite other people to come along on that journey with me. I'll help in any way I can.
Okay. Now, Robert, you'll get the chance to sit and muse about the question while I ask CJ number two. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now, CJ?
Through the work that I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be with Robert and go along our path as we're going. Work together. We have a purpose. We're life partners, and we're writing partners. And it feels right. It feels good. It took us 50 years to get together. Because we knew each other as children, and got back together 5 years ago at a class reunion.
Yeah,
so we've known each other forever.
And Robert, how about you? What is it you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
To help others to heal the way that I've been shown how to heal myself, and to explain the process of healing in terms that are simple and that are not, you know, religious oriented or that are, you know, thus saith the Lord type terminology. I find that my gift is being able to put into words feelings relative to the state of our consciousness and the different areas of that consciousness and how they can contribute to our confusion and our pain, and also in the right way, how that they help to reveal to us the nature of who and what we are and why we're here.
And to the two of you, final question. Robert, who inspires you?
Really, who inspires me? Life does. Life does. Every experience that I go through is a mirror of me and what I need to learn and know. It's a process of surrendering and trusting, you know, that the life that I experience every day is perfect for me and that it's meant to be that way.
And CJ, who inspires you?
I would say my inner child does. I like to keep young at heart, and I listen to my inner child when I write for children. Robert inspires me in a lot of ways. But yeah, I would say I'm probably my own best inspiration because I listen to that voice. It writes through me, I write through it, whatever, however you want to say that.
I like that. I really like that you inspire yourself. That's very, very cool. I want to thank both of you for joining me on the program and for staying up so late. You're out there in Florida, 3 hours difference, and this has been a great hour.
It has. You've made it very easy.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. We've been talking with Robert Cusmer as well as C.J. Heck, and the books that we've been looking at today, Anatomy of a Poet by C.J. By C.J. Heck, and Trilogy of Awakening. C.J. Heck, and then Robert Cusmer and Trilogy of Awareness. And we'll have the websites posted on our site, links on our site to get to their blogs and so forth. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.